Today on the 21st show, the campaign to be the next U.S. Senator from Illinois. Yesterday, we brought you recaps of our interviews with six of the Democratic candidates competing for their party's nomination. Today, we bring you the other two Democrats with whom we've spoken, Kevin Ryan and Juliana Stratton. We'll also revisit our interviews with five of the Republican candidates in alphabetical order: R. Kerry Caparelli, Casey Halebik, Jeannie Evans, Pamela Denise Long, and Don Tracy. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today, we continue our recap of our conversations in the campaign for U.S. Senate. This is for the vacancy being created by Dick Durbin's decision not to seek a sixth term. We're now less than a week away from primary election day in Illinois. As we've been mentioning throughout, early voting is underway across the state. To recap the race as a whole, there are 16 candidates running, 10 Democrats, 6 Republicans. We have offered all of them the opportunity to take part in an hour-long interview on the program. 13 of them have come through. On the Democratic side, in alphabetical order, Steve Botsford, Sean Brown, Owisi Bustos, Jonathan Dean, Robin Kelly, Brian Maxwell, Kevin Ryan, and Juliana Stratton. And on the Republican side, R. Kerry Caparelli, Casey Halebik, Jeannie Evans, Pamela Denise Long, and Don Tracy. Yesterday, we brought you highlights of most of our conversations with the Democrats. Today, the last two Democrats in alphabetical order, plus all of the Republicans. As for the rest of the field, Democrat Raja Krishnamurti's campaign has expressed interest in being on the program, but they canceled on us twice last year, and they have yet to reschedule. Fellow Democratic candidate Christopher Swan was not able to make our scheduled interview last month, citing a family emergency, and Republican Jimmy Lee Tillman II has not responded to any inquiries. As I mentioned yesterday, there's a lot of ground to cover and so many candidates to get through, and that means we only have time today to just scratch the surface, to cover a few issues with each person. Our focus is on topics most in the news this year and that we hear most from listeners about, such as immigration enforcement and healthcare policy. These may not be the issues you find most important, in which case we'll point you to the full interviews on our website, 21stshow.org. You can also find all of these recaps there if you missed or want to listen to one again. And speaking of that, we'll also outline some of the policy differences among the candidates in visual form online. Again, it's all at our website, 21stshow.org. Okay, on with the program. We begin today with Democrat Kevin Ryan from Chicago. He worked for a while in education and also served as an infantry officer in the United States Marine Corps. Eventually, he left his teaching job while continuing his military service. He also worked in the Treasury Department during the Biden administration. We spoke with Ryan in early January. We started by talking about his take on the state of the economy, and this is what he had to say about how to bring back more manufacturing jobs.
I support keeping jobs in the United States. I support bringing jobs back in the United States. And I think we really need to make a push to support union-made products and union-made manufacturing in the United States. It's going to cost more for consumers, so not everyone can do it. But there's a good amount of people in the United States who can. So all the people who buy designer clothes, or if you shop at Macy's, for example, you can afford to buy union-made products. And so I would like to see a corporate tax incentive to make manufacturers bring manufacturing back to the United States, especially in some of our rural towns. And also like to see like a government campaign to promote buying U.S.-made, union-made products to help support American workers.
Ryan went on to say he didn't think the president's tariffs would bring jobs back to the country. The conversation then turned to whether there's a need to abolish Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. He said that ICE, in its current form, has gone beyond the scope of its initial mission, and that a new organization would need to be created instead. He also had this to say on border policy.
we have to have a border. We are a nation of nations have borders for a reason. We can't just have people crossing the border without any kind of process to know who's coming and leaving the country. So we need to have an enforceable border. And I'm very critical of the Biden administration for not enforcing the border as well as they should have. And so now we have this problem where we have an influx of migrants in the country. And now what do we do with them? I support enforcing the border and doing a hard reset, just granting amnesty to those people who've demonstrated that they've been living, working, paying taxes, building our economy. Those people who've been living in this country and doing all those things, they deserve amnesty and a pathway to citizenship. Then we need to enforce the border and have streamline our processes for people to come into this country legally. When we look at capital versus labor, people like our own governor are able to offshore their trust and then not pay any taxes on the dividends they receive off of that, and that's wrong. Capital can move freely across borders, which allows the ultra-wealthy to evade paying taxes. They're effectively stealing from us. Meanwhile, migrant labor has to go through all these obstacles to try and cross the border to help build our economy. I would like to see the opposite. I would like to see a streamlined process for migrant labor to legally cross the border and come into our country to help build our economy while stopping our capital from flowing out freely.
I then asked Ryan if he would support universal health care.
So I get my healthcare through the VA, and I have seen just how life-changing it can be. In fact, because I get my healthcare through the VA, it helps me run for office in this instance. I don't have to worry about what happens if I get sick. And so when we look at the numbers, we spend on average about $15,000 per veteran on veterans' health. If we took that metric and applied it to the population of the United States, we're looking at about $5.2 trillion for healthcare. Our budget, our most recent budget was $7.1 trillion, I believe. So we're talking about nearly doubling the budget. So the question is, if that's how much it costs, can we afford it? And in the most wealthy country in the world, the answer is yes. The problem is we have a broken tax system where the tremendous wealth that this country produces stays at the top. And we're not using it or leveraging it to provide people the basic necessities they need, like universal health care.
We also talked about international politics and how the Senate could use its power to keep the executive branch in check. Again, this was in early January, not long after the capture of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro.
I mean, assert the war powers resolution. And I know it's hard for senators of the Republican Party to go against their president, but we've seen a handful of them doing so. We need more of that to assert Congress's authority over the president. Because the problem is when the Constitution was designed, we didn't have these parties. We had a check on the branches, not a check on the parties, right? So Congress has ceded so much of its power to the presidency, what we call the imperial presidency, which goes back to Teddy Roosevelt. It's kind of worked because we've always had a president who's been level-headed, but now President Trump is not acting level-headed, and he's abusing the imperial presidency, and Congress is not doing anything to assert themselves. Congress needs to assert themselves to reclaim their powers from the presidency, and that'd go. And both parties are guilty of ceding that power, so both parties have to come together and take it back for Congress, the sake of Congress itself.
We also asked what he thought of the Israel-Hamas war, and if Israel is committing a genocide, and if so, how the United States should respond.
So the definition we'll use is the United Nations definition. And they're performing a form of ethnic cleansing in Gaza. And ethnic cleansing is a form of genocide. If you're trying to destroy a population in part or in whole. And the Netanyahu administration has clearly demonstrated that they do not want Palestinians returning to Gaza, that they had no problem leveling major cities in Gaza. And it's because they're trying to ethnically cleanse the area, so that they can take it over and not have to worry about Hamas or all the problems that were stemming out of Gaza. They just want that problem to go away, and the best way to make it go away is to ethnically cleanse and get that part of the population out.
What should the United States do about that?
I think the United States needs to stop all military aid and funding to Israel until the current regime is held accountable for its crimes against humanity.
That was Kevin Ryan, Democrat, running in the primary for U.S. Senate in Illinois. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're listening back to excerpts from our interviews with candidates in the U.S. Senate primary this year. You can find the full conversations, all 13 of them, along with more information on the election at our website, 21stshow.org. The final Democratic candidate in alphabetical order is Juliana Stratton, the Lieutenant Governor of Illinois. Raised on the south side of Chicago, she worked as a lawyer, mediator, and administrative law judge. In 2016, she ran for state representative. During her only term as a legislator, a wealthy political outsider named J.B. Pritzker tapped her as his running mate, and she served as lieutenant governor since 2019. She was the first candidate we spoke to during the campaign, all the way back in mid-August. We started off by talking about immigration and citizenship status.
We do need to have a real path to, you know, citizenship for so many people, including continuing the great work that Senator Durbin started to have a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers. We need to make sure that we have a secure border. We need to make sure that people who are asylum seekers have a real path to due process and can go through the process so people aren't lingering in the system. But for these actors, that again is a directive from the top, and it is another example of Donald Trump trying to intimidate, instill fear, and pit people against one another. And we have to be strong, clear voices that that's not who we are. And, you know, I was very grateful that the courts recently demonstrated that the Trust Act is legal, that we're following the law here in Illinois. That's what we do, and we will continue to do that.
We also talked about whether she would end ICE as we know it. Again, this conversation was in mid-August, before Operation Midway Blitz in Chicago, before similar operations in Minneapolis, and before the killings of Renee Good and Alex Preddy. At the time, she didn't really answer the question.
Donald Trump and congressional Republicans, quite frankly, have led us into a five-alarm fire. It's not just what we are seeing happening on the streets. It's what happened in D.C. It's this threat against using the National Guard against, you know, not just people in D.C., but people in Chicago and other states. It's looking at what's happening with Texas and the Texas Democrats and redistricting and trying to silence the voices of Black and Latino legislators and communities. This is a pattern with this president in particular. And that's why I talk about it as the rise of authoritarianism. He is weaponizing this agency against communities. And so we need strong, steady leadership in Washington. And that's what I intend to bring.
I should add, more recently, Lieutenant Governor Stratton has called for abolishing ICE. On the topic of universal health care, Stratton had this to say.
I would support the Medicare for All bill. But what I could say is there's lots of different paths to getting there. You just talked about a couple of them. And I think no matter what, we should all be working on making sure that when people are sick, they get the care they need, especially at a time when we're seeing health care being threatened. To be a country where someone is sick and they have to drive hours, especially when some of these rural hospitals will close, and they have to drive hours to get the care. The fact that we have healthcare deserts in our state, maternal healthcare deserts, I wanted to clarify, where women are having children, but there's no hospital, no OB-GYNs available in their region, and they have to travel to safely deliver a baby. It's unacceptable to me. And I'm sure for so many people who are not getting the care that they need.
We then turn the conversation to the Israel-Hamas war and whether what Israel is doing in Gaza should be considered a genocide. Here's how she originally responded.
Well, look, what we're seeing in Israel, in Gaza right now, is clearly heart-wrenching. And I say that as a mother, just to see some of the images that we are seeing. And I've made it very clear that right now, we should all be very focused on getting humanitarian aid, food, and whatever's needed. Israel should be doing that. The United States should be working on that. And it needs to happen immediately, and it needs to happen right now.
I asked her the question again.
I respond in the way that I said. I don't agree. In fact, I've strongly disagreed with many of the ways that this war has been carried out by Prime Minister Netanyahu. But I also speak very clearly about what is happening with the humanitarian crisis that is happening and the need for the hostages to be returned to their families. I want to see a ceasefire. I want to see an end to this violence. But I also have to remember, as you just noted, how this all started on October 7th and the horrific terrorist attacks by Hamas and what has unfolded since. So I want to see peace. I want to see that happen. But we need something, you know, we need the hostages to be returned as well.
When I asked her about recognition of a Palestinian state or whether the U.S. should fund weapons to Israel, the lieutenant governor said she didn't want to jeopardize anything that would prevent the hostages from being returned home. Again, worth noting, this was before the October 2025 agreement that did bring the last hostages back. After some more conversation on global issues, I asked her whether America should maintain its place as a global superpower.
I think we should always be an example of what the power of democracy is. I think we should always be an example to the world of what it means when you have the right to vote, when you have assembled under the Constitution, when you protect people's rights, when you can voice your opinion, when you have the right to protest. I think that's an example of and what it means to have people from differing perspectives and such diversity. But unfortunately, that is not what this president is seeking to maintain. In fact, he's seeking to undermine it. And so I think at this particular moment, the reason why it's not about just, you know, I think certainly we have had a positive influence, but I think that for me right now in this moment, we are looking at a president who is undermining our very democracy. And that is what I am speaking out against. And that is what I believe we have. You know, we've had we're not perfect. This country is not perfect. But the idea of being a democracy and what that means is something I very much believe in and I want to preserve.
And that was Juliana Stratton, Lieutenant Governor of Illinois, candidate in the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate this year. All right, we need to take a break. When we return, we'll hear from some of the Republicans running for their party's nomination in the Senate primary. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're continuing our recaps of interviews with candidates running in the U.S. Senate primaries in Illinois. This is to fill the vacancy being created by Dick Durbin's decision not to seek a sixth term in the Senate. Again, early voting is open now. Primary day is next week, March 17th. We've now heard from all the Democrats we spoke to on the program. For the rest of the show, we'll hear from five Republicans we've spoken to in the past few months. If you want to listen back to our recaps, or if you'd like to listen to our full interviews with each of the candidates, you can find all of that at our website, 21stshow.org. Republican R. Kerry Caparelli works in sports marketing and teaches geography. His late father, Ralph Caparelli, was a Democrat in the Illinois House, representing parts of Chicagoland. The younger Caparelli has tried several times across both major parties to win elected office, from the U.S. House to the Cook County Board of Commissioners. He's also run for the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago and even the Illinois House of Representatives. Each of those campaigns was unsuccessful. I spoke with him in early February. We started by talking about immigration and ICE's performance. Here's what he had to say about that.
I would give him a high grade, maybe just short of a 10. You could only do with the work with the tools that you are given, and it's a very difficult task. So again, they could do a better job. When I say better, I mean handling the arrest or the deportation of the many, many illegals that we have in this country. And we have to remember, illegal means unlawful. And I don't have a problem with immigrants coming to this country that take the correct path, and the path is available, but they have to take the correct path. The country's got to be, and the government has to be accountable for these people. If we don't know who they are and where they are, we can't have them here. So it'd be a lot easier just to make that path a little bit more defined to make immigrants come in, but they can't come in here illegally or unlawfully.
I went on to ask him about the killings of Rene Good and Alex Preti.
Well, you know, I've seen the same videos that everybody else did, and it seems to be consistent that a lot of these protesters are actually breaking the law, and law enforcement's doing what they need to do, not only to protect themselves, but to protect others from these people who are quote-unquote violent. And let's, you know, it's very, very clear that many violent criminals have been arrested because of these procedures. And that's making it safer to have the violent.
What was Alex Preti, if you said you've seen the video, what was he doing that was illegal or violent?
Well, I think it's obvious. He was not acting tamed. He was being very, very aggressive.
For the record, that description contradicts what several witnesses say they saw and what bystander videos show. Quoting from an NPR story, Preti can be seen holding only a phone in his hand before at least six officers tackle him, pinning him face down on the ground, and shooting him in the back. Returning to the interview, Caparelli had no problem with ICE officers using masks to conceal their identities.
I believe all law enforcement officers, whether it's local police, state police, or ICE officials, federal officials, they have families too, and they have to protect themselves. I understand where they're coming from, and I have no problem with that. Yes, they should maybe have a number on them or something of that nature so they could be identified, but they don't have to show their face.
So you don't think they should have to show their face? Okay.
No. Again, you know, I think every human being wants to be protected. And, you know, you put them in a difficult situation like that, and identification becomes an issue. You have to protect yourself.
The conversation eventually turned to the topic of healthcare. In this next clip, Caparelli briefly covers affordability and accessibility in healthcare. I did prompt him to say more on the matter, as you'll hear.
There's two things. When I think about healthcare, I think of two things: availability and affordability. And right now, both are lacking. You know, it's very difficult to see a doctor. It's very difficult to pay those bills after you see a doctor.
Is there a government role for ensuring that, you know, sort of greater affordability or accessibility, as you were saying?
Healthcare is very important. So, yes, I do think the government does have a role.
One of the...
And refined.
Say that again?
Obviously, Obamacare, or ACA, has not fulfilled all of its dreams. So we have to make it better. And hopefully the president's Great American Healthcare Plan is able to fill those holes.
What about the subsidies that, you know, for the Affordable Care Act? This was something that for people who are, you know, sort of self-employed, they buy insurance on the marketplace. Depending on their income level, they could get some assistance from the government in paying for those premiums. Those went away as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that was signed into law last year. Do you think that was the right policy move?
Well, from what I understand, there's been a lot of fraud in that capacity, in that area. And again, it's got to be refined. It's got to be clean.
On to foreign affairs. And on the Israel-Hamas war, Caparelli had this to say.
That's a situation that we're not going to fix very, very easily. But we have to remember, Hamas was elected by the Palestinian people. And I think they, if they could have democratic elections in the future, they have to replace Hamas so we could negotiate with some effectiveness. Israel's our ally, and we don't abandon allies, and we have to treat them as such. But what we have to do is we have to find a solution that benefits the Palestinians and the Israelis and make everybody happy. If only one side's happy, we're not going to fix it.
I should note, Caparelli does not think Israel's actions translate to a genocide, saying what they've done is not necessarily targeting all Palestinians. With that said, R. Kerry Caparelli is running in the Republican U.S. Senate primary in Illinois. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We're listening back to highlights from our interviews with candidates in the Illinois primaries for U.S. Senate. We're presently running through our five conversations with Republican candidates. If you want to hear the full interviews with all the candidates and look at infographics we've put together highlighting some differences on key issues, it's all on our website, 21stshow.org. The next Republican on our list is Casey Chlebek. He was born and raised in Poland, emigrating with his family to Chicago shortly after graduating high school. His work background is in information technology and real estate, and he previously ran for Senate in 2020 and 2022, failing to get the party nomination both times. I spoke to Hlebek in early February. I should say this interview was not like most of the others. We didn't spend as much time on policy. When I asked him, near the beginning, why he's running for Senate, he brought up the idea of cultural Marxism. This is, in essence, a hypothesis that people in academia are working together to build acceptance of progressive ideas and, in so doing, overthrow Western society. We got into a conversation about that, which you can hear in full on our website. As I said, when we originally talked with Hlebek, we'll leave it to listeners to make up their own minds about that. That said, we did talk plenty about policy, including his ideas for dealing with the issue of immigration.
What I was suggesting, actually, sort of create around the world in countries that are interested in having the people immigrate to the United States, have a recruitment centers right there in those countries. And we provide them, at, let's say, some specific agencies designed for that purpose. I call it recruitment agencies. We provide them with list of the different jobs that we need, you know, the quota they need to fill, and they can be managed right there and then to match what our needs are and to make sure that these people share our values. I don't see the solution by going to the border and then be processed and you don't know what to do with this person, and later you end up paying for a stay and et cetera. I see it differently. You do it outside of the country, and when you come to the border, you already have papers, and no one is asking you more questions about, you know, what your status is.
I went on to ask him about ICE and its agents wearing masks.
In order to justify the purpose or the usage of the ICE, you know, in general, maybe we should have a bill designed before we even make that move. Before we make that move, to tell them you are, you know, empowered with this rules or whatever to follow before you move into the society. Because I don't take it very lightly when we have actually citizens being killed, you know, rightly or wrongly, but that's not a good message.
On the economy, Casey Hlebek called for overhauling the tax policy with what he calls the seven pillars.
Abolishing taxes on real estate properties. Abolishing taxes on all Social Security income. Abolishing IRS taxes on retirement income. No federal taxes for individuals under age 23 and under 26 for full-time students or married couples. 5-year tax holiday for all new small businesses. Then free prescription drugs for seniors, disabled citizens, and veterans. And lately, last one, to restore dignity through hard work and ownership.
In response to that, I asked him how the government would pay for the programs and services it provides without those tax bases.
The reason for this concept here that I have is to not so much take away money from the government, but save people's money, their own money. Taxes that you pay for real estate are their own out-of-pocket money. You know, all additional taxes that you pay have to, or they're deducted for Social Security, etc., they're all your own money. The same thing if you were to save 5 years on a new business or when you're younger. This is your own money. I'm not taking anybody else's money. Abolishing property taxes is probably the most challenging and difficult to accomplish. And I don't think it's going to be done with a stroke of a pen like the others may. This may take five, maybe even a decade to accomplish. But I think the idea behind it is that it should universally be applied and it should be done on federal level because I don't believe at all, I don't think it's almost like a daylight robbery that people are, you know, have to pay for their renting for their own house, so to speak, for themselves.
Casey Hlebek is a Republican running in the primary for U.S. Senate. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're listening back to parts of our conversations with 13 of the 16 candidates running in Illinois' U.S. Senate primaries this year. The full interviews are on our website, 21stshow.org. We continue to make our way through the Republicans. Jeannie Evans is an antitrust enforcement lawyer. She comes originally from Southern California, went to Brigham Young University for college, and then Harvard for law school. Eventually, she moved to Chicago, where she's worked as a lawyer for several decades. I spoke with her in mid-February. We started by talking about her immigration policy preferences. Evans is satisfied with how the Trump administration has approached the issue, particularly at the border, as border crossings go down significantly. She also had this to say about ICE's performance in Illinois and Minnesota.
Yeah, any killings, loss of life, injuries are sad and tragic, and we don't want to lose any lives. I think the unfortunate thing is in these two states, the Democratic leadership has taken an oppositional stance with respect to the federal government. So if I were representing United States in the Senate, I would be building cooperation between the local level, the state level, and the federal level. I would be wanting to work with the president. People do want to enforce the immigration laws. People do want to reduce crime in our communities. And our president is offering resources to help. And I think the Democrat leaders should be cooperating with the federal government. So in Minneapolis and Chicago, you have the unfortunate situation where Democrat leaders are telling people to take action to oppose the federal government. ICE, I mean, it's their job to enforce the immigration laws. Those laws were passed by Congress. It's not the right thing for state government to tell federal agents that they shouldn't be enforcing the laws that they're hired to enforce. And they shouldn't be telling citizens to try to stop or stymie federal agents when they're carrying out their legal duties.
On the subject of ICE agents wearing masks, Evans says she would prefer if they didn't have them. But she also said Democrats and citizens alike are disrupting law enforcement operations and putting lives in danger. Moving on to the economy, Evans was supportive of President Trump's tariffs, though she argued some changes could be made.
Trump is trying to bring other countries to the table to get fair trade deals. So if other countries are imposing tariffs on the United States, you know, prior to Trump, and we did not have reciprocal tariffs, he is wanting to get a better deal, a more equivalent deal for the United States. And in certain ways, he's trying to get certain trade objectives, and he's been using tariffs as a way to do that. And he's had some success doing that. So I understand what the goals are, what the tools are. I personally, as an antitrust attorney and someone who is very rooted in free market economics and really believe in the power of the markets to really unleash prosperity and innovation, I think my goal long term is to lower tariffs, to do it in a way that's fair and that protects American interests, but lower tariffs, I think, is better in the long run. And I think even President Trump is trying to get there. You know, he's using tariffs to bring people to the table to get good deals, but then as those deals are obtained, trying to lower the tariffs so that we can have more free trade. And I support that.
Evans and I also talked about elections and President Trump's call for Republicans to, quote, nationalize the voting.
People want to know that the elections are fair and that their votes are counted, and they're counted equally and fairly. So I think research, investigation about whether the elections are fair, that is a good thing. That is a fine thing to do. And we want to, promote fair elections so that people can feel good about the result. So, in the past, and I'm not calling for nationalism. I support the federal system we have, where we have 50 states, we have different state laboratories, and the states can manage their elections. I do think there is room for national standards. So I support voter ID. I think the majority of the country, not just Republicans, but the majority of Republicans and Democrats do support voter ID laws so that people, only people who are authorized to vote are voting. It's a simple, common sense answer that can make people feel better about the results of the election. So there's some room for a national standard like that. But I think, according to the law, the elections would be handled at the state level by each state.
That was Jeannie Evans, Republican candidate in the U.S. Senate primary here in Illinois. We have to take another break. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We've been spending yesterday and today bringing you excerpts from our interviews with the people running in the primaries for U.S. Senate in Illinois this year. This is to succeed Senator Dick Durbin, who is stepping down at the end of his term. Again, early voting is open across the state. Primary day is next week, March 17th. We've been going through the candidates by party in alphabetical order, and we're down to the last two Republicans. You can listen to our full interviews with all the candidates, plus see some of the infographics we've put together on the candidates and where they stand on a few key issues. That's all at our website, 21stshow.org. All right, Republican Pamela Denise Long has worked as an occupational therapist, a consultant, and an adjunct professor. She's also written political commentary in outlets including Newsweek and Real Clear Politics. She was born and raised in Mississippi, but has family history in the Metro East region of Illinois. She herself came there for community college. I spoke with Long in late January. The conversation started with something that had been much in the news at the time, and that was a push from the Trump administration to acquire Greenland. The argument was, and is, that it's a national security concern, particularly when it comes to China and Russia. Canada had also recently decided to work more closely with the Chinese government. Here's what Long had to say about it.
Well, and that's the thing that happens when you saber rattle, you can push people toward, I'm going to say the enemy, but the opposition, which in the case, let's be real, everybody knows that China and America has been in sort of this sort of standoff for a while. And the reality is that China produces more cars than we do. Taiwan with its semiconductor manufacturing and the same with China. Most of the world needs China more than they need us in that regard from a production perspective, because we're ultimately dependent upon the rest of the world for everything as well, from medicines to electronics and the like. So something has to give there. I, of course, would caution on doing too much saber rattling because we're in a vulnerable position and that's hard to acknowledge.
The conversation went on to NATO and whether or not the United States should remain part of the alliance.
The isolationist move is concerning. I'm a nationalist. I do believe that the nation that we built should serve Americans first and foremost. But we also, again, cannot be isolated in the nation over here in this hemisphere all by ourselves without allies.
We also spoke about the economy. In particular, Long brought up the possibility of eliminating the income tax.
So I think we need to revisit that. I know the tariffs that Trump has talked about is one way to do that. Now, mind you, I'm quite well aware that the consumer generally pays for those tariffs. But I think there are ways in which, you know, businesses might be able to support some of that funding. We have certainly placed, again, profit over the people. And I don't think American households should be responsible for funding government. I mean, if we even cut the waste and abuse just a little bit that we've scratched the surface on now, we really should be questioning how much does the American government actually need, first of all, in order to run basic stuff, because we have so much money right now that we can fund other countries, right, and other things. So I think we need to revisit it from, you know, I hate to mention the DOGE because some people don't particularly care for it, but as an organizational development consultant, I think efficiency and effectiveness is and cost savings, right, needs to be baked into how we think about appropriations in general. And I don't think it is now at all.
I also asked Long about ICE's actions across the country, particularly in Minneapolis, which was very much in the news at the time. For context, when we spoke, the Associated Press had recently reported on an ICE memo asserting that federal immigration officers could enter homes without a warrant.
Yeah, we're not doing that. And I think anyone who does that needs to be held accountable, and anyone facilitates that needs to be held accountable. So here, I'm a rule of law kind of gal. And so we cannot have government agents or officials who are advocating for things like that. You must have a warrant in order to enter someone's home. And I even have problems with the Patriot Act element where they're listening to us all the time. Right. And also selling our data. You know, there's a reason that when we say something around one of these devices that I look on my Facebook feed and, oh, look at that. It's Six Flags. And we just talked about it. So I have a problem with that as well. I do believe that Congress needs to be looking at what due process looks like for the 20 plus million people who were allowed to enter the nation against law. The truth is, the way that Joe Biden and Alejandro Mayorkas, the impeached Department of Homeland Security secretary, allowed folks to come into the nation was against immigration law. No doubt about it. Having said that, we need to look at what due process is. And I think Congress needs to be leading that conversation. I agree with the president that those folks who have a an order to leave the country need to be escorted out. I do think it matters how we execute that. I did not want to see a situation where federal law enforcement, immigration enforcement was antagonistic with the people. And I think in many ways we are there. There are ways in which, of course, the people are very much upset that we're enforcing our immigration laws as well. Those laws have to be reinforced. So where's the balance? I think the people who are being violent with ICE agents need to be held accountable, and ICE agents who are being unnecessarily aggressive and or violent with the people need to be held accountable as well. There's enough accountability for everyone. We have to have people with the will to do it.
Toward the end of our conversation, I asked long questions I've asked of almost every Republican candidate and office holder in the past several years. Who won the 2020 presidential election, and was it free and fair? This is a question where quite a few of the Republican candidates in this race either dodged it or asserted falsely that there was significant voter fraud in 2020. Here's how Long approached it.
Apparently, Joe Biden won the election in 2020. Yeah, well, he became president, okay. Right? I think that this hits at an election integrity issue. Well, it also hits at the issue of, you know, people asking, like, are you a sane person? Is what that question is kind of getting at for some people. Election integrity is important. If we don't have free, fair elections with little to no fraud, we don't have free and fair elections. We have to be able to count on it.
So was 2020, was it free and fair? Was there, you know, there's always some fraud. There's fraud in everything, right? People speed, people do
well,
this,
yeah. But... And I think there were some concerns that people had about when votes, you know, stopping, you know, counting votes early and all of that kind of stuff. And I've had and seen those reports, not just with the 2020 election, but with other elections as well. And so I think to the extent that there is fraud, it needs to be addressed. But Joe Biden became president in 2020 because I think more people voted for him in 2020. And, you know, and here we have Donald Trump getting more of the votes as well. And we also have people saying that, you know, the election was stolen from him, for him. And so I think we have to do what we can to assure that our elections have as little to no fraud as absolutely possible.
Again, Pamela Denise Long is a candidate in the Republican U.S. Senate primary. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We've been recapping our interviews with candidates for the Senate primaries this year. We've invited all 16 of them to take part. 13 of them came through. You can find the full conversations and more information on some of their policy differences at our website, 21stshow.org. We're down to our final candidate. Don Tracy is the former chairman of the Illinois Republican Party. He was born in Urbana, raised in Mount Sterling. In addition to his work as an attorney, he previously ran in the Republican primary for lieutenant governor in 2010. He also served as the head of the state's gaming board under Governor Bruce Rauner. I spoke with Tracy back in November. At the time of the interview, we had recently passed 2 years since the Hamas attacks on Israel, and I asked Tracy what he thought of the U.S. and Israeli response up to that point.
I think it's been measured and appropriate from the very beginning. We don't have boots on the ground there, but Israel has been a very strong ally of ours for many years in the Mideast and continues to be, and we should support our allies. The United States needs, and I particularly appreciate our efforts to bring peace finally in the Mideast. That is a really hard climb, but it needs to be done. And what I like to say, when people ask me why I'm so interested in politics, even though I haven't made a, I'm not a career politician. It's not been my career. The jobs I've done in politics don't pay, except gaming board paid $500 a meeting, but it was not quite a full-time job. It was about a half-time job as chair. But as I like to say, politics, I think, are one of the most important human endeavors, because with good politics, you have peace and prosperity. And with bad politics, you have war, death, and destruction. I think it's the most important human politics is the most important human endeavor, the most complex also, aside from war. And politics is the alternative to war.
I asked Tracy directly if what Israel is doing should be considered a genocide. He argued it should not, saying Israel's response is defending itself and preventing collateral damage. I also asked him how he felt about Doge, in particular, the moment last year when Elon Musk, quote, spent the weekend feeding USAID into the wood chipper.
Based on the reports that I heard, there were a lot of grants going to USAID that did not seem to serve the national interest. So, I obviously didn't do an audit of all the grants.
Sure.
I'm not one to say we should never do any foreign aid. But I do believe, as I think Secretary Rubio said, that it needs to be, foreign aid needs to be clearly in the interest of the United States and not to support a particular ideology or spread a particular ideology throughout the world.
Turning to domestic policy, Tracy and I also spoke about Health and Human Services Secretary RFK Jr. and how he has affected health care in the U.S.
As a lawyer, I believe in majority and dissenting opinions, and I don't think either. I don't think dissenting opinions should be quashed. So I think the medical community, based on the COVID experience, which you know involved masking small children and letting school stay out for way too long, which I think has set back a lot of children for a year or more, maybe some permanently. I think the medical establishment needed to be sort of shook up a little bit, maybe disrupted a little bit. Not of course destroyed or anything like that. We have one of the best medical systems in the world, but I think every now and then systems need to be examined in detail and perhaps changed. And so I see RFK as an agent of change. And now, will he be? Should he change everything? Of course not.
Childhood vaccinations?
Will he make some mistakes? Possibly. Well, if he were to say no more ever childhood vaccinations, I think that'd be a big mistake. But if he's going to challenge certain vaccines on a case by case basis, and do some maybe more studies on them, I think that's good. I think we've probably accepted some things over time that maybe shouldn't have been accepted. It does seem strange that we have so much autism now and so much mental illness now that we didn't have when I grew up in the 50s and 60s. Or at least if maybe we had it, we just didn't know about it.
And finally, I asked Tracy's assessment of the Trump administration's immigration enforcement actions. Tracy argued it was dependent on where it was happening.
Memphis has cooperated with federal immigration law enforcement, and they've, as a result, arrested a lot of gang members and a lot of criminals. They have also taken a lot of firearms off the street. They have made Memphis a safer place, and they've also found over 80 missing children. People forget that a lot of the people came across the border during the Biden open borders policy are missing. Thousands and thousands of them are still missing. And so they have found a lot of those in Memphis. So that has been a lot smoother operation. But in Chicago, we have a governor and we have a mayor that not only are they not cooperating with federal law enforcement, but they seem to be actually inciting resistance to arrest and even assaults on federal law enforcement officers. And that's created a lot of chaos. You can't expect law enforcement to just take, have people throw rocks and bottles at them and block them in and slash their tires and do nothing. And so they've had to respond with tear gas and things like that. And so then you get chaos.
Don Tracy is one of the six men and women running in the Illinois Republican primary for U.S. Senate this year. And that is the end of our recaps. You can listen back to the full interviews at our website, 21stshow.org. Again, we spoke with 13 of 16 candidates in the primaries, Democratic and Republican. Those who didn't either didn't respond or didn't come through with a time to speak with us. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Some of these interviews were originally produced by Harrison Malkin. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.